Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. Welcome again to another live episode of Wall Street Unspun, midweek market update. This is Peter Schiff, president of Euro Pacific Capital. I will be taking your calls live for the next hour, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Actually, still trying to get my computer online. I just finished doing Kudlow on CNBC, so I'm actually at their studio at 30 Rock, trying to log on to my computer from one of the green rooms where I'm going to be doing the show for the next hour. So you might bear with me. I might seem a little bit distracted as I'm still trying to get this mobile internet thing enabled. Anyway, a lot of news in the last week. Unfortunately, pretty much all of it bad. We'll get into that. But looking at the markets are continuing to weaken, around the world once again. Looking at the Dow Jones, the Dow dropped below 7.8 ounces of gold. This is a new low. And, I constantly talk about the value of the Dow in terms of gold, so we really know what's going on because gold is real money. And it's interesting, one of the people that was on Kudlow with me today, when I mentioned gold again, he said that he doesn't understand my obsession with gold, why, or anybody's obsession with gold. And I pointed out that it's not the obsession with gold, it's the obsession with fiat currencies. That's what makes no sense. I mean, he has a hard time figuring out why people value gold, but he has no problem with why people value a little piece of paper with a number on it. I mean, just because the government runs off some paper and puts a number on it, why does that mean that the paper has any value? I mean, at least gold has some real value. I mean, gold, you have to mine it. You just can't run it off the printing presses. I mean, there's intrinsic value there. Gold has real properties. The money that the government wants us to use instead of gold has no properties whatsoever. So it's amazing that people think that you need to have faith or you need to be obsessed with gold, but that they see nothing in just blindly accepting paper money without any understanding that there's a degree of faith there. I mean, even any central banker will tell you the only thing that stands behind paper currency, the only thing backing it, is faith. So it's, in other words, paper money is pure obsession. That's all it is. And the minute people lose faith or the obsession fades, so does the value of the money. But gold's value doesn't depend on any kind of faith or any kind of perception. Gold's value is a function of gold itself because it has intrinsic value. So as I said, the markets went down and made new lows in terms of gold. But at the same time, the dollar rose on the week again. Foreign currencies are once again on decline, which leads people to think that the dollar is actually strengthening. That's not the case. The dollar is weakening. It's just that other currencies right now are weakening even faster. Now, I don't believe that that is going to be able to continue, especially with the stimulus bill that was just signed and this new housing bill that's being enacted and the bailouts that are going on Wall Street. Ultimately, the dollar is going to have to cave in. Exactly when, I don't know. I mean, it's already long overdue, but I think the fact that gold is managing to be so strong, even in the face of the dollar rising relative to other currencies, shows that there's a real problem. And ultimately, the dollar, I think, is going to have to cave in. Meanwhile, to talk about gold and gold stocks for a moment, just kind of to draw an example of, short-term market movements. And again, why, as a long-term investor, I'm not focused on them or obsessed with them. Assuming that somebody bought gold stocks, and let's use a proxy for gold stocks as the HUI, the Huey Index, the gold index. So if you decided to put your money into those gold stocks last year and you bought the peak of the market, in October of last year, you were down 70%. Right? The entire gold stock index from peak to trough in just 2 or 3 months declined by 70%. Okay? Way worse than the decline in this U.S. stock market in general, whether it's the NASDAQ or the S&P or whatever. You did much worse in gold stocks. And a lot of my critics, you know, certainly tried to rub that in my face or pointed out that, oh, if you bought gold stocks, which is one of the things Schiff recommended, look how much you're down. You did even worse than the stock market. Well, let's take a look at where we are today. If you had put your money into gold stocks at the peak in 2008 into the Huey Index, today you would be down just 35%. All right, it's not spectacular. You're still down 35%, but you're not down 70%. You're down half what you were. In contrast, if you bought the S&P 500 in 2008 at the high, today you're down just over 50%. So now the people who bought gold stocks at the high are doing much better based on short-term results than the people who bought the S&P. So did it matter that a few months ago that wasn't the case? No. In fact, it doesn't even matter today that you're doing better. If you've got a long-term horizon, if you bought these gold stocks to own them for 5 or 10 years, again, it's all just noise. But it all depends on when you look at it. So looking at it from today, people are better off who bought gold stocks than who bought the S&P. And if you want to go back even further, let's say December 31st, 2007, or January 1, 2008. If you put all your money into the S&P, you're down about, I think, 47%, not quite 50%. But if you put all your money into the Huey at the same time, now you're only down 20%. Yes, you're still down, but you're not down nearly as much. Now, that wasn't the case a few months ago. A few months ago, you were way worse off. But again, we're not trying to keep score along the way. Now, the gold stocks have recovered as a group much more than foreign stocks in general. So if you're a Euro Pacific Capital client and you're looking at your non-gold stocks, those stocks have not made the spectacular gains. Many of the gold stocks have tripled and quadrupled, right? That hasn't happened with non-gold stocks. But my point in using the gold stocks is that these are the ones that have turned around so fast, and it just kind of illustrates how quickly a trend can change and how quickly paper losses can disappear. Now, obviously, you know, people who bought at the top of the gold market in gold stocks last year, they're still down. But that's the people who bought at the top. There are obviously many people who bought gold stocks when they were down 50%, and then when they were down 70%, they were way down. Now those people are way up, right? So, you know, but it's all, you know, looking at it from a short-term perspective. My only point is that there's a lot of people who I think bought foreign stocks, you know, either at the top in 2008 or someplace higher than they are now. But ultimately, I think those stocks are going to turn around, and I think the dollar is going to turn around. I think this dollar rally is phony, just like the gold decline was phony. I mean, gold is almost at $1,000 an ounce. In fact, if you look at today's close, this is the second highest close in history for the price of gold. And I think year-to-date, I think Larry Kudlow even pointed out today when I was on his show, that this year, in this calendar year, gold is up 35% bullion. Now, gold stocks are not up anywhere near that much this calendar year. I think they're up about 12% on the calendar year. But the bullion is up 35% on the calendar year. I mean, this is a spectacular move. And people were, you know, were talking, oh, gold's going down. It's not holding up. It's not a safe haven. But they were judging. They were making these judgments based solely on, you know, what happened in late 2008. And again, you know, the people who are trying to decide what strategies worked and what strategies didn't work for an economic crash are premature in trying to judge, because, you know, the jury's still out. We don't know, because the crash has just started, right? I mean, it's a long way from over. I mean, now certainly if you think that the worst is behind us and this is it, that the giant crash that I've been predicting for the last few years is over, that it's now behind us, you know, but that's not the case at all. You know, I think the lion's share of the damage has not been done to the U.S. economy. And one of the reasons for that is because we have had the benefit of foreign money pouring into the U.S. instead of running for the exits. We've benefited from the crisis so far because the dollar has been a safe haven choice. However risky that safe haven is, however misplaced that confidence is, we've benefited from it. And so the U.S. government has been able to finance all these bailouts and all these stimuluses. Now, ultimately, this is a bad thing. Ultimately, we're going to pay a substantial price for the fact that we were able to do this, because all of the bailouts and all the stimuluses are actually damaging the U.S. economy, which actually brings me to another point, because this is something that was addressed, I think, by some YouTube videos. But the reality is, think about what's happening right now. You know, what is the worst thing that's happening? That's the growth of the government. The government has seized this crisis to expand its power. The government is growing dramatically and expanding its involvement in every facet of the economy in our lives. It's growing at a pace probably greater than any time in history. The question is, how? Where's it getting the money? I mean, they're not raising taxes, right? There's no big, huge tax hikes, right? So how is this government growing? It's growing because it's able to borrow money. Well, where's it getting the money? Who's it borrowing from? It's certainly not borrowing from Americans. We're all broke, right? So we're borrowing from the rest of the world. We're borrowing from China. We're borrowing from Japan. We're borrowing from the Middle East. We're borrowing from Europe. We're borrowing from Latin America. So the reason that we're in so much trouble is because foreigners are lending us all this money. And the best thing that the world can do to help America is to cut us off. Because what are we doing with the money they're lending us? It's not going to reinvigorate our industrial base. It's not going to finance a new factory that's being built. It's going to finance the growth in our government, which is undermining the competitiveness of our economy. And it's going to subsidize Americans to buy more stuff that we don't need with money that we don't have, and they're enabling us to go deeper and deeper into debt. If anybody really wanted to help this country, they would refuse to buy any of these bonds, either from the U.S. government. They wouldn't want to buy any more credit card debt or any more auto loans. They would cut off the source of the funding, because that's the only way we're going to get the reforms that we need. This economy is never going to be in good shape again. We're never going to right the ship unless we purge these imbalances from the system. It's got to get worse. People think, well, if the Chinese stop buying our bonds, then the economy would be worse. Yes, in the short run, it would be worse if you measure it by our ability to spend money. Yes, if they cut us off, it'll be worse. Just like if your drug dealer cuts you off from heroin, in the short run, it's worse because you can't shoot up. You can't get high. But if your drug pusher really cared about you, he would stop giving you the drugs and understand that the tough love is what you need, that if you just can get through the withdrawal, that you'll be in much, much better shape. You know, same thing with your kids. You know, I got a six-year-old boy. The easiest thing to do is spoil him. The kid starts to cry, and you give him what he wants, and he stops crying, right? But is that the best way to raise your children? You know, to give in to them every time they cry? Sure, in the short run, everybody's better off. But in the long run, nobody's better off, including your kid. So that's what we really need. But unfortunately, it's not happening. We're able to borrow more and more money, and we're digging ourselves into a much deeper hole. In any event, I want to try to get to the phones, but there's a link that I get, and I need to get that link. So hopefully someone will email it to me, and I'll be able to see the callers that are queuing up. Anyway, I started doing this show on Fox News, not on TV, on the internet, this thing, Strategy Room. I've been doing it each Wednesday. I did it this Wednesday, and I did it last Wednesday. It's not on television, but I think you can see it on the internet. I think people are posting YouTube videos of it. You could also watch it live. They stream it on the internet. I think maybe they're trying to make a show out of it on Fox. Who knows? And you know, actually, if it becomes a show, who knows if I'll even get on it. I seem to be having a difficult time getting on Fox News. I don't seem to have a hard time getting on Fox Business, but you know, I haven't been able to get on Fox News. You know, it's unfortunate too, because I used to do the Glenn Beck show a lot when he was on Headline News. And unfortunately, they haven't invited me on the show since he's been on Fox News. In fact, they had invited me on the initial, the premiere episode. I was scheduled to be on that. And the day before, they ended up canceling me, and they haven't booked me since. So we'll see what happens on Fox News. You know, also, unfortunately, and although maybe they'll rectify it, I taped a fantastic interview with Frontline, who did a special that aired yesterday on the financial crisis. And I did at least an hour of footage, and they were eating it up. And I was, they said they were going to put me on as the guru that predicted the crisis. And I explained exactly how the U.S. got into this mess and how the government's plans were making it worse. It was a great, great interview. They have great footage. And when the show came out, they didn't use any of it. They didn't even show me. But one thing that they did do is, when they were talking about housing, they used two lines that I said from the hour interview, and so you can hear my voice on the program. But they don't even identify me. They don't show my picture. They don't say that was Peter Schiff. They just have my comments, you know, just coming, you know, just on, you know, as they're showing pictures or talking about housing. So you have nothing. Who's speaking? So hopefully they'll get around to using all that footage. It'd be a shame if it just ends up on the cutting room floor, because I think the special would have been a lot better had they really gotten into why we got into this problem, as opposed to just, you know, chronologing what happened behind the scenes at Bear Stearns and at Lehman Brothers and at the Fed. I mean, that was interesting. I mean, I thought it was interesting television. But I think it would have been more interesting if they had shown the footage of me. And hopefully they will, because I think they might do a couple more segments. But who knows? We'll see. But anyway, you can keep checking. It's Frontline on PBS. Anyway, let me quickly hop to the calls. I think I've got the first caller in Connecticut, Claude in Connecticut. You go on.
Hey, Peter, can you hear me?
I got you.
Okay, just want to let you know that I've read both of your books, and I'm following your investment advice. I have the Merck X Fund. I also have the Franklin Templeton Hard Currency Fund, and I do own gold and silver. So I'm doing my best to follow your direction, and I'm looking each week. I look for whatever info I can get, whether you on YouTube or wherever I can get info from you and listening to you. But I had a couple questions. The first one is, the rest of the world seems to be following the United States lead, and they've gotten so used to for so long of, you know, the United States lowers interest rates, the rest of the world lowers interest rates. At what point do you think that they're going to decide to break with this? Because it seems like, you know, we've gotten into this mode where, you know, they think the United States is it as far as the economy goes, and, you know, it seems like they may not want to break with this, considering the fact that
they're going to have to eventually. I mean, right now I agree that they are still following our lead. Everybody is slashing interest rates. Everybody is printing money. And this is making the situation worse. And what's going to happen is, if we keep passing all these bailouts and stimuluses, they're costing a fortune. But it's not costing America a fortune right now. It's costing everybody else a fortune, because they're the ones that have to buy the bonds. And each time we bail somebody out or stimulate the economy, we make the economy worse, and we sow the seeds for an even bigger bailout that's going to come down the line. So, you know, now we got an $800 billion stimulus, right? And plus all the other trillions that the Fed is doing. 6 months from now, they can come back with $1.5 trillion stimulus, and then $2 trillion stimulus.
Yeah,
Meanwhile, we're going to keep passing the bill to our foreign creditors. And if they keep lending us this money, the global economy will never recover. But ultimately what will happen is we're going to have worldwide massive inflation, and of course, eventually all the foreign stocks that we own, I think, are going to go up anyway, because all paper currencies are going to evaporate.
Yeah, I mean, we know that this stimulus is not going to work. I mean, if people are overloaded in debt, I don't care what you do, you're not going to convince him to go out and buy another car if he's already got a lot of debt.
Well, we don't want him to buy another car. That's a bad thing. When you're in debt, you don't buy more stuff. You pay off debt. But what we don't want is, because Americans can't go any deeper into debt, we don't want the government going into debt for them.
Right. Okay. So the other question I had here is, How do we know that China and a lot of these other governments are not printing money too?
They are printing money. How do you think they're buying all of our treasuries? How do you think they're buying all this? They're printing money to do it. Yeah, it's not a secret. We know they are.
Well, I mean, where's the proof, though? I mean, I know that Ben Bernanke has used the word.
Like the proof is there. Plus, they have to buy our debt. They have to buy the dollars with something. They have to print up their own money. I mean, that's where it's coming from.
Right. I mean, I've heard Ben Bernanke use the words expanding the balance sheet. Now, as far as I know,
that means inflation. Look, whenever a central banker talks about it, my father used to call them in the biggest con, he called them zigs, or, you know, it's, you know, whenever the government uses words, they're euphemisms for inflation, because they don't want to, you know, my father, he said it was like inflation is their god, but they never want to use the Lord's name, so they always have another way to refer to it. And it's, you know, expanding the balance sheet, liquefying the system. You know, all of these words are simply a nice way to say we're going to create inflation. So whenever you hear economic stimulus, you know, whatever they're saying, it's inflation. Just substitute the word inflation, you know, instead of, you know, whatever words they're using, because that's all it is. It's just printing money.
Right. But what I understood expanding the balance sheet to mean was, from some of the things that I've listened to, is that expanding the balance sheet is basically changing the reserve ratio so that you can fractionalize the financing,
The Fed's balance sheet. Expanding the balance sheet means the Fed buys more assets, and it buys more assets by printing money. So when they're talking about the Fed's balance sheet, they're talking about the things the Fed buys with the money it prints. And so what people want is the Fed to go out there and buy more things and print money to do it. They want them to buy mortgages. They want them to buy credit card debt. There are people saying they want the Fed to buy houses, you know, to buy them up just to push up the price. Buy cars, you know, go buy cars from General Motors. So the car, you know, I mean, they want them just to buy stuff. You know, they just want to create inflation.
I see what you're saying. So if I have $1,000 in the bank account and they want to lend that out to everybody, they can say in the beginning, okay, well, we'll turn that into $10,000. But in this case here, with this bailout stuff, they're not saying, okay, we'll turn that $1,000 into $10,000. They're saying, now we'll take that $1,000, and now, well, because the situation is so bad.
All it is is the Federal Reserve prints money and goes into the market and buys something. It's kind of like communist countries nationalizing something. When the government buys something, they're taking it away from a private owner, you know, that could have bought it. And where's the government getting the money? They're creating it out of thin air, which means they're just basically stealing purchasing power from somebody else and acquiring an asset. And that's the last thing we want the government to do. Anyway, thanks a lot for your call.
Okay.
Let me take the next caller, Chris in Missouri.
My quick question was, what's the trigger point going to be for? I read a lot on Bloomberg this week. China's already scared. You know, Clinton went over there trying to reassure them that, hey, you know, we're going to stick with our monetary policy. But what's going to be the trigger point, do you think, that China's going to get, when they get to that point, saying, okay, that enough is enough, we're done?
I don't know. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, we're already way beyond that point. I don't understand how it is that we're able to sucker the world to do it to the extent that they already have. And as I said, it's hurting everybody. The creditors are getting hurt because they're loaning us money they're never going to get back, and we're being hurt because it's enabling the destruction of our economy. And, yeah, in the short run, we benefit, just like in the short run, a spoiled child benefits if you give him what he wants.
Yeah, because
as he's growing up.
Yeah, because China's going out now. They're going around the world buying up mines, a lot of copper, a lot of minerals.
Well, that's what they should be doing.
And they're spending money on hard assets, I think, in order, so when they do decouple from everything, they've got their own resources.
Well, they are buying up resource companies, but they should be buying a lot more.
Yeah,
what they're doing, they're buying a lot more treasuries than they are resource companies.
And then what's going to be? What is your? And I've listened to you a couple weeks now, but what's the balance portfolio? I've been talking to one of your representatives the balance of an investment coming into what you're talking about as far as gold, as far as currency.
Okay,
as far
that's a conversation you should have with one of the brokers, because it depends on a lot of factors in your personal situation and what you're looking to accomplish and what type of risks you're willing to assume and what your time horizons are. But as I said, I think that the longer your time horizon is, the fewer dollars you want. Because the longer out into time, it's like, you know, this thing is a ticking time bomb. I just don't know, you know, how long the fuse is. I know that eventually it's going to blow. And so the longer your time horizon is, the more likely it's going to blow up during that horizon. And so you want to make sure you're in other assets. But whether it's precious metals, whether it's dividend-paying stocks, whether it's bonds, or what kind of combination, is something you got to figure out and have that conversation with one of my representatives. But it's easy to have it on this show.
Gotcha. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for the call. Yeah, anybody who's interested in discussing our investment strategies should call up, you know, 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922, and talk to one of the brokers, either about building a stock portfolio or buying some precious metals. You know, we're selling more and more precious metals through the Perth Mint program, and that thing is just absolutely exploding. And obviously, you know, gold, as I said, this is the second highest close in history. So obviously everybody who's bought gold from us over the last 5 or 6 years, obviously they're all way ahead. I mean, that's not the case for people who have been buying stocks. But everybody who's bought precious metals, the prices have never been this high. Now, silver, we have people that bought silver higher because silver got as high as $20. And now it's back down to about 14. But a few months ago, it was 9. And so I think silver is a great buy here. I think silver is going to make a new high, just like gold is about to make a new all-time high. Platinum, too. Platinum was at $2,000 an ounce, went down into the 800s. Now it's about 1,100, but it's still way off its high. So make sure, and if you don't have any of the physical precious metals, you know, what are you waiting for? You know, they're going higher, I think, and I think that right now, I mean, The only way to go, I think, is up. That there seems to be very little resistance. And I think that if gold can be this strong in an environment where the dollar is rising against other currencies, imagine how strong gold will be when the dollar starts to fall. Now, I think in the short run, my guess would be that if there was a big drop in the dollar, let's say against the euro or against some other currencies, my guess is that gold would drop. I think the initial reaction, because people would be kind of embracing paper again and shunning gold. You might see that. You might see a big drop in gold, 10, 20 bucks or more, if the dollar dropped. But I think that'll just be a short-term phenomenon. I think if we resume a downtrend in the dollar, right, not just a one-day move, but if we really resume the dollar's downtrend, I think that's going to be very bullish for gold, even though there could be some days where you see the negative correlation as people are moving back into currencies and out of gold. And some of it has to do with the fear factor. People are buying gold out of fear, and then when they're not as fearful, they buy stocks and they buy foreign currencies. Although one of the things that people are afraid of when they buy gold, and rightfully so, is inflation. Inflation is debasing money all around the world, and if people have any sense and they want to save money, and most people want to save money, they want to store their purchasing power, they realize that they can't store it in any of the government alternatives. It's just, so you have to buy gold. Anyway, next caller is Otis in Tennessee.
Hey, what's going on, Peter?
I don't know. You called me. What's up?
Oh, listen. You know, it's like, man, I read the newspapers and stuff, and it's like every time I read the newspapers, like, I get so mad. Like, you know, it's like you know, Obama get on there and on the on TV or speech or whatever, he'll go and rant about how this is the worst financial crisis, you know. And then it's like the talking heads on the media, you know. They're like, you know, this is just a mild recession, you know. Like,
well, you know, unfortunately, Obama's right. This is the worst crisis. But the problem is his policies are making it even worse. You know, no one understands, the source of the problem and what needs to be done about it, because right now all we're doing is pouring gasoline on the fire, and now we're going to complain when more people get burned. But the reality is we need to do everything the exact opposite. I mean, look at today. Look at that housing bill that Barack Obama is delivering to cheering people in Phoenix, Arizona, who obviously are overpaid for their houses or borrowed too much money for their houses and looking for a handout from the government. You know, this is the worst thing the government could be doing, is trying to interfere with the market's attempts to reprice houses lower. Houses are still too expensive. Prices need to fall. Unfortunately, foreclosures need to happen. It doesn't mean that people are going to be out on the streets. You know, every time there's a foreclosure, you know, the people just simply move into another house. They rent the house. They're not being kicked on the street. And when there's a foreclosure, somebody moves out of the house and somebody else moves in. The market is able to function. The houses don't just sit empty. You know, and when housing prices come down, somebody benefits from that because somebody's able to buy the house at an affordable price, and they don't have to take on as big a mortgage. That's what we want to happen. But, of course, the other terrible thing about what the president is doing with this bailout is the perverse moral hazards and the incentives, because the government is saying that we will, you know, redo your mortgage if you tell us you can't afford it. Well, a lot of people are going to be calling up and saying, I need help. I can't afford my mortgage. And a lot of people, since they're basing a lot of it on your income, and they're saying that we're going to bring down your mortgage in line with your income, a lot of people are going to lie about their incomes. You know, just like they lied about their incomes to qualify, they over-exaggerated their incomes to qualify for the mortgage. Now they're going to under-report their income to qualify for the subsidy. And in some cases, if they have to take action, they will. Like, for example, you might have a two-income family where the husband and wife work, and maybe the wife actually took a job simply so they can afford to buy an expensive home. Maybe she was a stay-at-home mom, and they wanted to buy a big house, and so she entered the workforce so that their combined incomes would enable them to afford a house. So let's say they get together and say, you know what? Let's say the wife quits that job. Because right now, let's say the mortgage represents 35% of their combined incomes, and they really can't qualify for any help. But if the wife quits her job, now all of a sudden their mortgage is 60% of their income. Well, now they can qualify and have their mortgage payments cut in half. Well, why wouldn't they do that? I mean, you're talking about $100,000 or more in savings. They would do that. And, of course, you know, there's nothing that stops somebody from quitting their job, claiming they were fired or doing something, and then whatever, then they qualify for the new lower mortgage, and then they go back and get the job, because once you got the lower mortgage, you got it. I mean, it's there. They don't constantly monitor you. And even if they could, I mean, there's no way. I mean, remember, there was so much fraud at Freddie Mae and Fannie Mae and all these mortgages. There were so many people who lied to get to these conforming ones. And the government didn't know. Nobody knew. You can't police this. It's gigantic. And it's all politicized. There's no real incentives here. So this is going to be a mess. This is going to make the problem worse.
It's their job to know, like, you know,
but
like,
they
what are
can't
they doing?
Know. It's impossible, and it's not their job. Politicians don't belong in the housing market. That's not why they're there. You know, we had a debate in this show I did on Fox today, the Strategy Room, and somebody said, I think it was Tracy Burns, said that, you know, we've elected all these people, and now they're running all these businesses, but they, you know, they didn't have the right qualifications. She says that we need to elect people to Congress that know more about banking and running businesses so they can do this. And my point to her is, no, it doesn't matter how much they know. You can't run businesses from the government. Even if you get the smartest people, the minute you put them in government and say you run the business, it's not going to work. The reason that capitalism works is because people have risks. They're risking their own money. Entrepreneurs are motivated by profit, and you have Adam Smith's Invisible Hand. That's why capitalism works. If you take those same entrepreneurs and you stick them in Washington and you try to tell them to micromanage the economy from Washington, D.C., it's not going to work. So it's impossible to have the right people in charge. We don't want anybody in charge. That's the reality. That's the problem.
All right.
Anyway,
I have one quick question. What what is going on with oil? Like, that, you know, like, it's particularly those Canadian trusts, like, they're getting, like,
well, look, they're getting hammered. Look, the Canadian trusts, and we've been buying Canadian trusts for 10 years for my clients. I bought more myself today. I've been buying them. Some of these trusts hit new lows. I mean, I think they're very, very cheap. They're getting cheaper every day, but the dividend yields they're paying, a lot of them are paying 15, 20, 30% dividend yields. Some of them will be cutting their dividend yields, but you know, even if they cut them, they're still huge. I mean, it's still better than the alternative, which is next to nothing by leaving your money in the bank. And at some point, look, oil prices are not going to stay in the 30s forever. I think they're going a lot higher.
It's like, you know, everybody's forgetting, like, we're running out of this shit. Like, you know, it's like these prices are just, you know.
I know what you mean. Anyway, Otis, thanks for the call. I really appreciate it, but I got to hop. Let me go to John in Hawaii. Go ahead, John.
Hello.
Hey, John. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good.
Well, it's good to talk to you. Two quick questions. The first one is I'm more of a small-time investor. It doesn't really, you know, hire a full-service broker like Europac doesn't really make sense. You know, right now I currently own about $20,000 worth of gold in November and $10,000 worth of silver in November.
Okay, so you're trading the futures contracts.
No. I bought bullion.
Oh, I thought you meant November. Okay. You bought in November. Okay.
Yeah, and last November I bought, you know, about that amount of bullion, and I have another $20,000 to invest. And you know, I'm wondering, just your opinion on what I should do with that. I mean,
If you want to buy precious metals, I mean, the minimum with the Perth Mint, which is what we do in your Pacific Capital, is $10,000. So you've got plenty of money if you want to buy gold or silver through the Perth Mint Certificate Program, which we're working at Euro Pacific Capital. So you call up and get that done. It's not really a lot of money to build a good portfolio of stocks, but it's certainly, you know, you don't want to lose the money. You want to store it. You want to keep it safe. The last place you want to leave it is in the U.S. dollar, even though right now it looks like the dollar is holding on. I'm saying it's holding on because it's on life support, and at some point, the people that are supporting it abroad are going to pull the plug.
Well, I guess the question is, since I already own $30,000 worth of bullion, do you think I should? What about just using that money to buy gold ETFs or silver ETFs, or maybe, you know, buy some of these foreign stocks you've recommended?
You might want to do it through a mutual fund or closed-end fund or some of the things. Look, you know, talk to one of the brokers off the line, and depending on, you know, I don't know, I can't ask you all the right questions on the show, but maybe there's some way that we can help you. I mean, we have small accounts. I mean, so feel free to call.
And the other question too is. You know, I've got a $50,000 credit line, and I'm wondering what your opinion is just in general based on, you know, the economy right now and where we're going.
Well, I mean, look, I don't advise people to borrow money. Certainly, I don't advise people to borrow money and go out and spend it. To the extent that, you know, you're borrowing to finance a business, it depends on what the business is. It's a tough climate for a lot of businesses. Should you borrow to invest? I wouldn't do it on a credit line. I mentioned in my book, Crash Proof, that I thought if you can get a mortgage on a house, because the government is giving away money, if you can get a fixed rate mortgage for 30 years at 4.5%, 5%, I would do that personally. I mean, if I had a house, I don't, because I would like to take that money and invest it in high-yielding assets, knowing that, you know, I'm going to get enough income on the assets to pay the mortgage, and eventually I think the dollar is going to collapse and you end up owning these assets for free. But again, you know, there's risks in that strategy too. I mean, there's risks in everything you do, and so people have to thoroughly look at the risks and understand them and decide, you know, what they want to do. I mean, I know what I would do if it was my money, but again, I don't even own a house. I'm still renting, and I still think for a lot of people it makes sense to sell your house, but a lot of people can't do that. And I know now it's probably a lot more difficult to borrow against your home as a second mortgage or something, but I don't know. I guess I've never tried to do it because, as I said, I don't own a house.
Right. And then, yeah, I'm trying to understand the Federal Reserve and like, why, if it's a private corporation, why does the president appoint the chairman?
Well, that's just how it was set up. I mean, because it's like quasi-government, private. But, yeah, I mean, but it is private. I mean, if you ever get a letter from the Federal Reserve, I've gotten some, you'll notice that there's a stamp on it. But if you get a letter from the federal government, it's frank. There is no stamp. So, I mean, you can see that it's not an agency of the government. If it was an agency of the government, they wouldn't have to pay for postage. It is private, but unfortunately, it doesn't act like a private company. It acts like a government agency, and that's the problem. I mean, it was supposed to be independent, but it's lost all that independence. It's now a tool of the politicians, and they're using that tool to destroy the economy. Anyway, thanks a lot for the call.
All Thank you.
The last caller I've got on hold, I still got some time. It's 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. Oh, wait a minute. No, I do have more callers. I take that back. Stop. So don't call. I thought I was running out of callers, but there's a bunch more in the queue. So let me go to Brandon in Florida. Brandon, you there?
I am there. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I remember last show you talked about, or a couple shows ago, I don't know, but you're speaking about credit card situation, how it's kind of going to get out of hand pretty soon with just people just saying, well, screw it, I might as well spend as much as I can, max out on my card.
I do think there's a moral hazard. I mean, as we start bailing out people who have a lot of mortgage debt, you know, why can't we bail out people who have a lot of credit card debt? You know, one of the things that's interesting, let's say there's two people, you know, neighbors. One guy rents a house and one guy owns a house. So let's say one guy decided he wanted to buy a big screen TV and a new car, but he didn't take out a car loan or take out or use his credit card. He took out a second mortgage. He mortgaged his house, right? And then he used that money to buy his car and to buy his plasma TV. So he doesn't have any credit card debt, or he doesn't have an auto loan. He just has a bigger mortgage. That guy is going to get his payments reduced. The other guy who was a renter who now used a credit card to buy his television set and took out an auto loan, he doesn't get any help. I mean, at least not yet. But what's likely to happen is they're going to say, look, if you're bailing out people who borrowed too much money against their houses to buy stuff, what about people who borrowed too much money to buy cars, or borrowed too much money to buy furniture, or borrowed too much money to go to college? I mean, why aren't we bailing out all the people who made stupid choices and bad decisions? Ultimately, that's what's going to happen.
Well, just to test this out, I actually went ahead and found some gold and silver companies that took credit, and I've been doing that myself, and I don't know if you can give me your approval.
I think you're better off, you know, using your credit card to buy gold coins than using your better credit card to buy a TV set, because the TV set's going to depreciate a lot faster than your gold coins, which are probably, you know, so. But I mean, I don't generally tell people to go into debt, but you know, people do what they're going to do. I mean, ultimately, I think the price of gold is going to go up. I wouldn't tell you to buy the Perth Mint with a credit card, and we certainly don't take a credit card for the Perth Mint, but
yeah.
Look, people buy things on credit cards, and I can think of a lot more stupid things to buy. Look, people will buy a gold watch on a credit card. They'll buy jewelry, right? So, I mean, you know, so you can buy yourself, you know, gold coins on your credit card, but, you know.
I was actually really surprised that they're still, the lending practices are still.
Now, I mean, generally,
gone through yet.
No, I mean, obviously what you can do when you're buying gold coins, if you can buy them on a credit card, and if they take them, they don't charge you extra, it makes sense, because you can maybe get mileage for airline points, and then you can simply pay off the credit card bill in full when you get it. I mean, I try to do that whenever I can. I mean, whenever I have a bill that if I can put it on a credit card, I will, not because I'm going to finance it. I always pay my credit card bills in full when I get them, but, you know, I might as well try to get mileage or something that I can use.
One more question.
And you still get a float. You know, if you put it on a credit card, you can get, you know, a month and a half to pay the bill without any interest at all. Now, so you still get some time value of money.
Right. I was also wondering, I was kind of wondering where you get your statistics and your information from, because I know a lot of the stuff we see on TV and in the news, a lot of it's propaganda, and I was wondering how you get
statistics. I mean, most of it is just, most of my analysis is not based on statistics. It's based on common sense. I mean, I can see a lot of what's going on without having to go dig up the numbers. And generally, when I do end up getting some statistics, it ends up confirming what, you know, I thought anyway, just based on just observation. But anyway, thanks a lot for the call. Let me go next to Brandon in Florida. And no more calls.
I got five callers on hold.
So, huh?
It's still me. I'm Brandon.
Oh, we're done. Okay, thanks, Brandon. Let's go to Joe in California.
Hey, Peter?
Yes.
Hey, how you doing? This is Joe, and I'm over here at the heart of Silicon Valley at San Jose. And I was wondering if you're ever coming over to California time soon, because we'd love to have you over here at our economics department to give a lecture.
Yeah, you know, I was going to try to do something up at Google, and now I ended up, I'm doing it at some point, Google Authors, but I'm doing it in New York. I'm going out to California. I'm speaking at a conference in California in Laguna Beach or at the Ritz-Carlton there, I think, in about a week or two. I'm going, It's late in February. I'm going out there. I forget the name of the organization, but it's in they're having a 3 or 4 day event at the Ritz-Carlton at Dana Point, Laguna Beach. So I will be out there, but I don't know if I have any plans to do any other seminars while I'm there. But if you're on my database, you know, maybe if there is anything in your area, we'll definitely send you an email.
Okay, because I mean, we would love to have you speak over here at our school. We've had lots of.
I got a request recently from my old alma mater, I think Cal Berkeley, to come speak. And as I said, you know, I get a lot of speaking. I accepted a speech. I'm speaking a keynote, at Auburn at the Mises Institute. I'm speaking. There's things I've accepted. I'm going to speak for. There's a lot of stuff on my calendar. A couple of things are up on my website, but most of my engagements are not on the website. We got to try to fix that.
Correct. I understand. But we had Dr. Folsom yesterday discussing his book, The New Deal, A Raw Deal, over here at San Jose State.
Yeah,
we'd love to have you over
here. You just got to email me. I send it to my PR department, and we try to assess, you know, what the event is, whether I have time to go, my schedule is pretty tight. So it's most of the people who want me to speak, unfortunately, I can't do it. But anyway, thanks for the call. Next up is Andre in New York.
Hi, I'm here. I have three questions, and if I have time, two comments. How are you doing today?
I'm good. What's your comment or question?
Okay, first of all, I wanted to know, if I want to take on a lot of risk, what would be the best way to go? I was looking at Bauer shares long double for gold and oil, but I'm concerned about Deutsche Bank. What happens if it goes down?
Involved with some of these structured products, which is why in general I've stayed away from them, is you have the counterparty risk of the entity on the other side of the transactions going broke. So I think that, you know, that's not certainly a risk that you want to look to assume. But I, you know, as I said, my strategy for people who have said, look, I'm very aggressive, I'm willing to take a lot of risk, I've always just bought the gold stocks, the mining stocks, and I still think they're very cheap. In fact, I can't even think of a better business right now than being a gold miner, because the price of what you're selling is going straight up, and the cost of producing it is going straight down. I mean, energy is going down. Look at the currencies in the countries where gold is mined. The currencies are falling, so that means labor costs are falling. So it's cheaper to produce the gold, and you get more money for it when you sell it. So the economics of the gold mining business are getting better and better every day. So if somebody says, look, I really want to speculate, I want to buy some stocks that might go up 10 or 20 times, those are the stocks that I think you should buy.
I see. Then another question is about the U.S. companies. There are still U.S. companies that are exporting stuff and unique stuff and great stuff.
Oh, yeah. The U.S. government continues to undermine our economy, and it's going to make it harder and harder for those companies. You know, as the government props up companies that should be failing, what they're really doing is diverting resources away from other more productive companies that would have had those resources had the government not diverted them. So the U.S. government is going to make it more and more difficult for companies that could succeed in this country to succeed. They're undermining the competitiveness and the dynamics that's still left in our economy.
Yeah,
and they've done so much damage already in the past.
Eventually, Intel is still needed by the whole world, you know, or Boeing, you know.
Yeah, well, look, we have some good companies in this country. The question is, how much longer are they going to be around? How much more of this can they stand? You know, that's the problem. Anyway, thanks for the call, Andre. Next call is Chloe in Minnesota.
Am I on?
Yes, you're on.
Oh, okay. Hey, Peter, I just got a couple of quick questions for you. I mean, one question is, you know, I'm contributing to my 401k at work. And one of the options that I've got are international funds. You know, we've only got 9 or 10 options that we can contribute into. And so I'm wondering if contributing into the international fund, if that satisfies kind of getting out of the dollar? I mean,
I don't know what is in the international fund. You have to take a closer look, but it certainly sounds like it. It might be the best of the choices that you have. I mean, I think that even though the foreign markets have fared worse than the domestic markets, you know, in the past year or so, I don't think that's going to be the case over the next 5 to 10 years. I think you're going to do much better abroad. So I would try to distance myself from the dollar. I would try to look for international funds. I would try to look for precious metals or natural resource funds or a foreign bond fund or whatever you can do. And if it is domestic, I would try to look for the ones that are the multinationals or the exporters or some, you know, U.S. funds that are more of those types of companies. I would be staying away from, you know, anything that's too domestically focused, and I would certainly not be buying any of the debt types of funds, you know, government bonds, muni bonds, anything that's considered to be really safe. You know, they try to say, well, this is safe, this is, you know, U.S. government bonds. You know, I think those, they're not safe at all.
Okay.
Especially if you've got a long time horizon.
Okay. And then one more quick question. I've got a rental property as well, and it's almost paid off. And the market in Minneapolis is really bad, and I'm not going to be able to sell it for very much. If interest rates do rise and, you know, prices go down, what do you think is going to happen to rental rates?
Look, it's a very telling. It depends on the market. I mean, I think you can have various offsetting factors. I mean, you know, if the government keeps people in their houses, you know, with these mortgage subsidies, then that will be negative for rents because rents will be coming down. And I also think that if the government, you know, can get people into, you know, reduce people's mortgages, many people might decide to put their houses on the market for rent. Because let's say the government brings down your mortgage based on one of these plans, and they cut your mortgage from $2,000 a month to $1,000 a month. If you can rent the place out for $1,200 or $1,300 a month out, people might do that. They might decide that, you know, they just might decide to take the cash flow for 4 or 5 years or however long the thing is. So I also think as the economy weakens, you know, you're going to have more and more people moving in with roommates or kids moving in with their parents or parents moving in with their kids. So that might reduce the demand for rental housing. But, of course, inflation is going to be driving rents higher. But it's all, you know, there's different things that are going to be happening. In general, I'm bearish on property in the United States, whether it's residential, whether it's commercial. I think rents are going to fall, certainly in terms of gold. I think certainly the rents are going to fall in terms of, you know, what you might be able to rent property for abroad or the dividends you might be able to earn on other assets. But I think, you know, rental property is probably better than single family houses. If you have multifamily or apartments, I think, you know, you'll lose less than if you just have single family homes.
Okay.
Anyway,
okay.
Thanks for the call. Anyway, we got one more caller left. That'll be it for today. It is Jim in California.
Oh, hey, Peter. How are you?
Good.
Hey, I've got an observation and a quick question. So, I was watching CNBC today, and I saw something that I think is related to some of the negative coverage that you've been getting recently. So it's basically Fast Money. Dylan Radigan opened his show by talking about the rally in gold and went on to say that, you know, anyone that's long gold is basically short America, is short American society, is negative on the U.S., and on about how anybody that's buying gold is basically anti-American. And, given that it's a trading show, I found that to be a little strange, right?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, obviously, you can say that when you're betting on gold, you're betting against the current version of the American economy, and I do believe that the American economy is in trouble and is going to fail. But I'm not. It's not a bet against America as a society, as a nation, or as a people. It's not a bet against what America used to be in the past or what America could be in the future. But it's certainly a bet against the phony economy that we have today, and it's certainly a bet against Barack Obama's policies, and it's a bet against the Fed's policies, because I think the policies are wrong. I think the policies are going to fail, and I want to protect my wealth. I want to protect the wealth of my clients, and gold is one way to do it. And, you know, I really wish that I didn't have to buy gold. I wish I could buy you know, the U.S. stock market. I wish I could buy bonds. I wish I could tell my people to put their money in the bank and save it, because that would help our economy. We need savings. But unfortunately, that's not the message I can deliver, because that's not what's happening.
Well, you know, I agree with you, and I think that, unfortunately, anybody that comes out and, you know, speaks realistically about what's happening in the economy is immediately painted as somebody who's not patriotic, and I think it's ridiculous.
Same thing they would say about me. You can see some of these other shows I did. I remember this guy Tom Paine on Fox News. You know, he would call me un-American, anti-American. There you are, you know, rattling every time. And you know, in 2006 or 2007, when I was on television with this guy, he insulted my patriotism just because I was talking about problems. As if it's, you know, if you're a patriot, you have to shut your eyes to the problems. It's like my country,
yeah,
right or wrong. And again, I'm not against America. I'm certainly against the government that we have today, the policies that our government is pursuing, because those policies are anti-America, because they're anti the Constitution. I mean, everybody that works in government takes an oath. They swear an oath to defend the Constitution from all enemies, domestic and foreign. And then they break the oath with everything they do. The biggest enemy of the U.S. Constitution is the U.S. government.
Yeah, agreed, 100%. I think your PR department has done a fantastic job in getting you out there. And quite frankly, I think, you know, in the future when these stories crop up, it might not be a bad idea to share with some of your listeners, you know, the names of these reporters and maybe their phone numbers at work and maybe their bureau chiefs and where they work out of. And, you know, let people like me give those folks a ring
give
our side of the story.
I have no, you know, reason to want to go tit for tat with people or try to get people to get harassing phone calls. I mean, that's not what I'm about. Look, I get good press, I get bad press. You know, it's all part of the game. You know, it's like, you know, if you can't stand the heat, you get out of the kitchen. I put myself in the kitchen. I put myself out there. I go on TV. I'm on the internet. And I seek out media. I seek out coverage. I mean, I think I seek it out for my business. I seek it out because I think it's the right thing to do. I want my message to get heard. I want people to understand that there's another opinion out there. And when the economy is falling apart, I want people to understand why. And I don't want them to believe the propaganda and all the other things that they hear out there, that it's because of capitalism, it's because of greed. I want my message out there. So I'm going to get critics. I'm going to get fans. You know, and that's just the way it is.
And I would never advocate harassing these guys, but I do think they have an obligation when they're writing a story for them to be truthful and empirical in their representation.
The only thing that kind of pisses me off is when people criticize me, but they try to pretend that it's an honest criticism. They try to pretend it's journalism, but it's really a paid advertisement. That's what I don't like. I don't like hypocrisy, and I don't like deception. If somebody legitimately has a problem with what I'm saying or with me as a person, and they want to express their opinion, hey, that's fine. But if somebody has an agenda or someone is being paid by a third party to put out information that they themselves believe is false, and they're not disclosing that it's a paid advertisement, they're trying to hold it out as if it's legitimate journalism, but they're really shilling for somebody else, and what they're saying they don't even believe themselves. That kind of stuff I don't like. But other than that, hey, it's fair game. Anyway, hey, thanks a lot for the call. I really appreciate it. Anyway, it's getting close to the end of the hour. Next week, I'm flying out to California on Wednesday, and I probably will be doing the show myself live from California a week from Wednesday. Tomorrow, I leave on a vacation. I'm actually heading away for a few days to get some rest, and so hopefully I can enjoy that. I will be working on my book, though. I'm working on Crash Proof 2.0, so it's never really a vacation. Plus, I bring my computer with me. I'm doing some work. It's hard to get completely away when you're running the business, but I'll try to get a little relaxation in while I'm out there. Anyway, thanks a lot, everybody. Again, remember to call 800-727-7922. Visit the website if you're listening on shortwave at www.europac.net. Thanks a lot, everybody. See you next week.